So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes.
Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F-35A.
Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
The COVID-19 pandemic posed unique problems for Wisconsin's court system. Imagine jurors who must sit next to each other. Imagine both prosecutors and defense attorneys who must sit close to their clients. Imagine criminal defendants being brought from a jail. And imagine the public that wants to watch, in some cases, what happens in Wisconsin courtrooms. On March 22nd, the Supreme Court issued an order suspending jury trials in most circumstances and in-person proceedings. On April 28th, Chief Supreme Court Justice Patience Rogenczak created a COVID task force to study how Wisconsin's court system could reopen, respecting the health needs and the safety precautions of everyone involved. I want to thank, for purposes of discussing how Wisconsin courts will reopen and the changes, I want to thank Randy Koshnick, a former Jefferson County judge from 1999 to 2017, who's now director of state courts. I want to thank Bayfield Circuit Court Judge John Anderson, who's been on the bench since 2003. And finally, retired Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge John D'Amato, who served from 1990 until 2018 before he retired. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining the show. It's a huge issue. I really appreciate it. And I want to open with a quote from the COVID Task Force report. It is important to remember that, quote, normal, close quote, court operations in this environment will mean something very different than in the past. Director of State Courts Koshnick, can you give us an overview before I ask our other panelists of what that means, sir?
I'd be happy to, Stephen. Thanks for having us on. So courts obviously serve an essential function in our civilized, organized society. And so I'd like to point out the courts have been in operation in one form or another since the pandemic first hit. We basically in mid-March, about the time the first order came out, scaled back the hearings to only essential hearings because you can't just shut the courts down. You have personal liberty interests at stake. You have constitutional rights that need to be protected. You need the court system to resolve disputes in family cases frequently involving children. And so the courts need to keep operating. And so what we were struggling with at the administration level was, how do you keep courts functioning while also flattening the curve and trying to prevent the spread of the pandemic through the court system? And what we did, first of all, was I purchased Zoom licenses for every judge in the state so that they could continue to conduct hearings, but hopefully do many of them by remote video conferencing, which allows for distancing, of course. I think that worked out pretty well. That was a quick gear up for my IT department, known as CCAP, because they had to learn the software and train the judges to use it. And so we went remote pretty much right away when the state Supreme Court ordered jury trials to be suspended and most other in-person proceedings to also be suspended. And now we're trying to get back up to speed by rescheduling cases that have been canceled or postponed as a result of the pandemic first becoming a problem in mid-March. And so, as you said, Steve, the Supreme Court on May 22nd issued a new order allowing jury trials and other in-person proceedings to resume so long as each county circuit court has a safety plan in place approved by the respective chief judge, which adopts the recommendations of the COVID-19 task force, including masks to be worn by all courtroom participants.
Thanks, Randy. Judge Anderson, since you're on the bench in a rural county, impact of the pandemic in a rural county, sir, because you and I have seen the numbers, the incident rate of COVID-19 is much higher in southeast Wisconsin and up through the Fox Valley. So, excuse me, how has the pandemic changed how you run your courtroom? I'm going to get some water here.
We had to change along with every other circuit court throughout the state because of the Supreme Court's orders. Granted, we in this part of the state, there weren't as many cases, and there still aren't as many cases. Yeah, but the population, for the most part, is receiving the same information everybody else is, and it worries people. Bayfield County, like most northern counties, have a very old population, so we have a elderly group that we have to be careful with. In some respects, we haven't had the same, problems that larger counties have had in southeastern Wisconsin, but I think it's had kind of a psychological effect the same way here as it has everywhere else. People are cautious and concerned, and they have a lot of questions. But, as the director indicated, once we transitioned into doing video appearances and telephone appearances through Zoom, I think many of us, my court in particular, was able to transition into that phase pretty easily and operate at a very high level and handle most of the cases by video conference. It's we can't handle everything that way, but I personally found, and I think a lot of judges found, that there's a whole lot of potential out there with using these types of technologies to enhance and give people the access to the court system. So in some respects, every county is a little bit different, but we had to do the same things here that they had to do in Milwaukee. I mean, we stopped people coming into the courtroom for the most part, and we did things by using Zoom video conference. And to be quite frank, I don't know how the director's office pulled all this off in a week, but it was in about a week we were up and running and doing just about everything we could do that we did before. And it was a little bit of a miracle in my estimation.
Well, Judge D'Amato, you bring the perspective. You served on the task force. You were on the Milwaukee County bench for, if my math is right, 28 years. Milwaukee County Circuit Court, the busiest court. I've come into some of those courtrooms and the safety precautions. So talk about the impact of a pandemic on the busiest circuit court in the state of Wisconsin, sir.
The impact really has been frightening to the extent that there are thousands and thousands of cases that really haven't had the opportunity to be processed the way they have in the past. When you think about the thousands upon thousands of, for example, eviction actions that get filed every year, every day, the courthouse really literally has been closed and people have not been able, landlords have not been able to file eviction actions. The backlog is going to be tremendous. In terms of the civil courts and in terms of family courts, they've done many proceedings via Zoom. They've been able to do that because you don't have the same constitutional right issue, the right of confrontation issue in most civil cases and in family law cases. And so it's easier to do things by Zoom in with respect to civil cases. But the really important cases, the criminal cases, they've had to actually keep a couple of courtrooms open for preliminary hearings and for intake proceedings. And obviously there have been multiple requests for speedy trials. Speedy trial demands have increased. But at this juncture, at this point in time, until it is determined safe for all the participants, there won't be any jury trials in Milwaukee County. I believe they're hoping to potentially be able to start up again at the end of this month or early July. But the stakeholders involved need to make a determination. The one thing about the COVID-19 task force that I was on was that the first thing that was recommended was that each county, basically via the chief judge, would put together a committee of stakeholders, people who have a stake in the justice system, criminal, civil, family, juvenile justice system. And it includes lawyers, prosecutors, defense attorneys, civil lawyers, the judges, county officials, corporation counsel, and most importantly, local health officials who can weigh in on the timing of reopening court proceedings. I mean, as you know from having read the report basically had four committees, a staffing committee. How do you staff during this COVID-19 pandemic? In terms of the facilities, how are you going to ensure that the facilities are safe for people to make appearances, to come to the courthouse, to have their day in court, to get justice done? Then you've got the in-person committee, which talked about how you resume in-person proceedings. You don't just go back from zero to 100. It's a process. And then, of course, jury trials will be last to be phased in. But these stakeholders need to come together. They need to discuss this with each other to determine the timing. What I like about the report is the report provides a framework. It's a framework that small counties and large counties alike can utilize. And obviously, in smaller counties, I believe the process can move along much quicker than it can in Milwaukee County, where you've got tens of thousands of cases. I mean, just coming into the courthouse on a Monday morning, sometimes there's a backlog of 45 minutes. When the courthouse reopens, particularly when you're bringing jurors in, how are you going to enforce social distancing, PPE for people in the process? It's going to be a lot of work for all counties, right, but particularly difficult for the larger counties like Milwaukee County. And then, of course, there's always the cost involved as well. There have been suggestions that, well, maybe the Milwaukee County Zoo could be used as a place where you could have jurors come in because you could enforce social distancing. And perhaps you could use the facility for selecting juries, or maybe in civil cases, even doing jury trials. When there were discussions about that, one of the questions asked was, who's going to pay for all this? Because the county has a budget, but each division, each department is budgeted differently, and everybody is possessive of their budgets.
Yeah, those are very good points. Let's go through four of the recommendations that are non-negotiable here, starting with everyone in courtrooms, jury rooms, court-related spaces must wear face covering. Now, Judge Anderson, I've been up north recently. I'm going there this weekend. Let me just say politely, there's less acceptance of face coverings in northern Wisconsin than here in southern and southeast Wisconsin. Do you anticipate much resistance to the thou shall wear a face mask?
Well, you know, we've already done our first jury trial, so I've had some experience with this already. At least here in Bayfield County, our population is pretty acceptable to face masks. Now, that doesn't mean every northern county is going to feel that way. My son lives just south of here in Sawyer County, and I get the impression maybe that county maybe not as agreeable to using face masks. But, for the most part, when it comes to the court system, people take their appearances pretty seriously, whether they're here voluntarily or, involuntarily. And if you're asked to, put a face mask on, for the most part, during our jury trial, the jurors were very compliant. Everybody was very compliant. I think, for the most part, most people are using the philosophy that, it's better to be safe than sorry. And, we're all in this together. And, if the judge says you got to put a face mask on, then we're going to put a face mask on. And my experience so far has been mostly positive. It doesn't mean that there aren't people out there that are going to, disagree and object. But for the most part, at least through the court system, I think as long as we explain what we're doing and we're respectful to everyone, they'll be respectful to us. And I think so far, my experience has been that it's working pretty well.
Randy, as director of state courts, you've got a lot to do with the budget. Is your budget are you going to submit a budget item for face masks for all of Wisconsin's courts, sir?
Well, that's a really good question, Steve. I actually was working on that this morning with my management team. We're trying to be partners with the counties, and the court system in Wisconsin is a partnership. So the state pays for the judges and the court reporter salaries and so forth and some other support payments to the counties. But really, most of the cost rests on the counties. They have to maintain the courthouse, and they pay the clerk of court staff and the sheriff's officers who provide security frequently. And so I'm working on a number of different avenues. Governor Evers just last week announced, I think, $200 million in federal money he's going to distribute to the various state agencies and the counties for PPE. And so I'm trying to work with the Wisconsin Counties Association to make sure some of that money is used to pay for masks that we're going to need in the court system. My office has also purchased some masks out of our, it was not a budget item, but we had some money that I was able to reallocate to buy masks. And we're going to be shipping those out to the counties directly, to the courts directly, late this week, early next week, and try to get a pipeline going through the county supply chain. But it's a work in progress. I work on it every day. But yeah, the short answer is, Steve, we're hoping that those extra dollars that have come through the governor's office from the federal government can be directed to help us pay for the masks and the other, you know, extra materials we're going to have to provide to the people who come to court.
Judge D'Amato, just quickly, because I got a few other points I want to make. Do you see acceptance of a face mask mandate in Milwaukee County Circuit Court, sir?
I do. I agree with Judge Anderson. I believe people coming to the courthouse, they're looking for justice in some fashion, in some way in their case. And I think that they will follow the rules, because if you don't follow the rules, you won't be able to participate. And I think they're reasonable. You know, one thing I recall is, and I'm sure all of us recall this, years ago, there was a saying by some retailers, no shirt, no shoes, no service. And in this instance, quite frankly, in our courts right now, when a lawyer appears in front of Judge Anderson, if it's a man, he's wearing a coat and a tie. If it's a woman lawyer, perhaps a coat, perhaps a dress. There's a dress code. And lawyers really don't give us a hard time about that. And in a sense, we're adding something to everyone's dress code. And it's put there for a good reason. It's put there for safety reasons. And I don't think that there's going to be much pushback in that regard.
Okay, and the next point I want to cover, a judge can waive the face covering mandate to help determine a witness's credibility. Judge Anderson, Judge D'Amato, and former Judge Koshnick, do you see this happening often?
Judge Anderson, you did the first jury trial in the state after the new orders. What do you think?
Yeah, so we had to do a jury trial last week. It lasted 3 days, and our compromise for the witness was to not have a face covering because it was going to interfere with the fact finder, the jury, being able to judge credibility and believability of a person. And we wanted to make sure that all the witnesses were going to be the same. So we had a witness wear a transparent face shield. That worked okay. The feedback from the jurors after the trial was there was a little bit of glare off the face shields and it wasn't easy to see. So we're going to be looking at probably putting a transparent barrier around the witness stand. But, you know, we're pretty cognizant that, you know, covering up a witness's face during a hearing of great importance is probably not the best idea from the standpoint of judging credibility.
Okay.
And, you know, we can't have some witnesses with face masks and some without. So I think using some type of transparency, you know, making sure that the witness is far enough away from everybody else, there are ways to do this. You have to remember that, you know, what we're doing here is all about risk reduction, not risk prevention. Right. There's nothing we can do in a courtroom per se that's going to be a perfectly safe environment with a pandemic going on. Okay. But we're trying to reduce the overall risk as best we can and still give people equal justice under the law.
Another mandate that I want to cover quickly, sanitation, hygiene, hand sanitizer, disinfecting wipes. They will be mandated frequently on touch surfaces, hands of participants. Do you see that happening just generally after a court proceeding or even wiping off a witness stand after one witness leaves and another comes? Judge Anderson, your thought?
We wipe down the witness stand after every witness. We wipe the chairs down. The counsel tables all have wipes on them. We're cleaning everything off every time someone gets up and leaves. So that's just what we have to do right now.
Judge D'Amato, wouldn't that be an incredible burden with a court with a caseload of Milwaukee County Circuit Court, sir?
Would it be a burden? It would add something to the burden. But I think it's a necessary addition. It's a necessary burden. Plus the fact that you're explaining to the jury what you're doing and why you're doing it. If anything, you're giving jurors a greater level of comfort that everything that can reasonably be done to ensure their health, their safety, their protection I think goes a long way. And I also agree with Judge Anderson in terms of when it comes, and I know Judge Koshnick agrees as well, when it comes to the determination of the credibility of a witness, it's not what someone says necessarily, but added to that is how they say it, their facial expression, their body language. And I do think that there are ways, and I think that Judge Anderson did it in his recent jury trial, is you can place the witness stand in a position where perhaps that witness is 6 feet from all the other participants. And I think every courtroom does have some video capabilities. You could put a screen up. You could actually video the witness in the courtroom on a screen for those jurors who may be at a position where they have difficulty seeing the witness. Because if you're going to do social distancing, and I'm not sure how Judge Anderson did this, if you do social distancing with jurors, you're going to have jurors who are in different positions to see the witness, to judge the credibility of the witness. And so video can be used to at least enhance that. Everyone's in the courtroom. You can see the witness, but you may be able to see it clearer on the screen. My statement is where there's a will, there's a way, and it can be done.
Okay, and now I want to turn to Judge Koshnick on the process here. Each circuit court shall submit its operational plan to the chief judge of that judicial district. There's how many districts, Your Honor?
Nine.
And then if the chief judge allows a circuit court's operational plan, the chief judge shall issue an order allowing courts to reopen following these public safety rules. So that's a process. Does that involve you as the director of state courts or even the chief justice, or is it purely on a regional basis?
Well, the answer is yes to both. First of all, I wanted to tell your viewers that wicourts.gov is a state court system website, and we have the report from the COVID-19 task force up there, and people can actually read the various plans that are coming in and being approved by the chief judges. So I think what the Supreme Court wanted to do in its May 22nd order allowing jury trials to resume was to have certain minimum standards, including masks being mandatory. And that's in large part because the medical experts on the task force said, if you're gonna force people to be in the confined area, one of the best things you can do to stop the spread is to have the face mask. And so there are certain mandatory requirements in the order. Then there are other guidelines from the task force, which judges need to consider yes. and put in their plan together. The Supreme Court, I think, also wanted to give each district its own flexibility to adapt to the local, you know, unique characteristics of each county. And so that's why the chief judge in each of these nine districts looks at each individual circuit court judge or municipal court judge plan, make sure it meets the minimum requirements, make sure all the stakeholders have had input into the final plan, and then that chief judge either approves or doesn't approve it. And then it actually, by the order's terms, has to be sent to me and to the chief justice. So we see each one as they come in. In fact, I see them coming up on my screen as we're talking right now. They're flowing in right now. Every day we get a couple more. There are five right now that have been approved and posted on the state court website. And so the chief justice and I can see what's being submitted. If I have a question, I can call a chief judge and ask him or her to look into something. But it's an evolving process that allows us to monitor county by county.
Well, we've gone over the four non-negotiables, but now there's, having read that report this morning, there's just some items I want to get the feedback because they're potential changes. Someone summoned to jury duty would get an elaborate explanation of the safety precautions, but you're recommending standards for deferral or excuses based on health conditions, based on age, based on whether someone can get childcare. You're based on these special circumstances. Would jurors have to have their temperature taken? Do you envision that? Anybody?
We took their temperature before we
every
let
day?
Them into the jury selection. Yeah, every day. So on our first day of our jury trial, we had a retired doctor who moved up here. She was at the Mayo Clinic. She moved up to Bayfield County to retire, plus a registered nurse. And we actually did a jury selection in the Washburn High School gymnasium. And thank goodness I've got the greatest staff in the world to work with me on this. But we had doctors and we did a medical screening. So out of the 44 that showed up, 7 people screened out that they weren't medically able to come in. One of them was a little symptomatic. The others, though, didn't do a lot of social distancing and were at large events recently, and others were traveling out of state. So we went through a screening process and we took their temperatures. And we did that every day for the 12 jurors that were picked.
Judge Anderson, I'm so fascinated by the recommendation for social distancing for jurors. Now, in a traditional jury box, I'd be sitting there, and I'd under these circumstances, if my neighbor coughed, I'd be worried, and I would not be following the testimony. How did you put jurors throughout your entire courtroom?
Well, we spread them out in the well of the courtroom. So our jury box holds 12. So we actually put 6 in the jury box, and we kind of staggered them. And then we had a 7th off to the side next to the jury box. And then we had 13 actually for this trial. We had one alternate. And then we put 5 more out in the well on chairs and socially spread them around so that we were spread around pretty good. We made sure that they could all see monitors, and some monitors that the jurors in the front of the courtroom or in the well were a little smaller, they couldn't see. So I don't assign seats for jury trials. So the next day I said, everyone switch seats. So everyone got a different view on the next day. But we were able to do it. Now, not every courtroom is the same. And that's one of the reasons that they're letting the individual circuits figure this out, because not every facility is the same. And what works in one county may not work very well in another county. I could never pick a jury at the county courthouse. I need to have a bigger facility. We don't have a room big enough in the Bayfield County Courthouse to pick. If we brought 50 or 60 jurors in, we just couldn't do it here.
That Bayfield County Courthouse was probably built when, Your Honor?
In 1896.
1896. Judge D'Amato, given your years in the courtroom, do you envision the Milwaukee County Courthouse is in need of what, renovation or tear down, a complete new one? Can you envision social distancing in the multi-judge environment of Milwaukee County Circuit Court, Your Honor?
Yes, to this extent. In terms of jury assembly, our jury assembly is pretty large, but you can't do social distancing in that room. You may have to use other rooms in the courthouse. I mean, for example, the county boardroom, which isn't used all the time, it's large. The biggest problem is going to be when you get the jurors to the courthouse, where are you going to keep them before they are brought into a particular court for the jury selection process? And like I say, I think what's going to happen in Milwaukee County is, at least they're going to start, when they start jury trials, they're going to start out with a limited number of jury trials in terms of bringing in, because you're going to have to bring in more people now for one jury trial than they did in the past. So I think you're going to end up having to prioritize. One of the things in the jury trial report was that the presiding judge in the county is going to prioritize cases when they go to trial and how they get scheduled. So perhaps in Milwaukee County, if you've got 11 civil judges are not going to be allowed to schedule a jury trial on the same Monday. It just won't work. But you can find space. And they're talking in Milwaukee County about finding a large enough space to bring in a lot of jurors and then finding places to do the jury selection. But I agree with Judge Anderson. You can't put 12 jurors in a jury box and honor social distancing. And one of the things that we discussed during our committee meetings were you're going to have to spread people throughout the courtroom. One of the things that they may do is that may limit the ability of the public to be sitting in the courtroom to watch proceedings. And therefore, you may have to video live stream for people who want to attend the trial because it's open. Most hearings are open to the public. There are a few that aren't, but most are open to the public. And if they can't be seated in the courtroom, then you need to be able to live stream. I mean, we've had cases where you have too many people who fill right even before COVID-19. You had so many people who came to a sentencing in a particular case that you fill the courtroom and there were more people who had to be on the outside and you had to stream it for them. So there's a way to address all of these issues.
But when you talk about live stream, maybe Judge Koshnick's blood pressure goes up because these courthouses don't have the ability to do that, not to mention the tech costs of live streaming to another room. Am I overstating that, Your Honor, Judge Koshnick?
Well, actually, that's another pivot we've been required to make is public and media access to proceedings being held 100% virtual. So CCAP figured out how to incorporate Zoom into a YouTube channel. It's actually resulted in greater public access and media access than we've ever had in the past. You can now sit at your desktop computer. You can watch a sentencing in Bayfield County and a another proceeding in Dane County. And so it depends. The counties buy the video conference equipment in the courtroom. That's a county expense. But the state provides the Zoom license and the technical support and the technical support to put it on the YouTube channel. So we're finding new ways every day to use technology to our advantage. So anything's possible.
Well, what about the courtroom staff, the court reporter and the bailiffs? Are they going to be required to take COVID tests and our daily temperature checks? I mean, we talked about doing it for jurors, and Judge Anderson already did it, but what are the health requirements for court staff? And has anyone heard of any court staff employee who said, I'm not comfortable with this. I don't know that I'm going to be coming back to work. That's kind of a broad question. Randy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going through this right now with my administrative staff. So I have administrative staff in Madison and around the state. And what we're looking at is something called a 4-10 plan. You have half your employees come in for 4 days, Monday through Thursday, let's say. Maybe somebody who's got special needs, maybe they come in Friday with a smaller group. And then the second group comes in the following week, Monday through Thursday. So you're keeping basically two teams in case there is an infection. You hope there isn't. It would only knock out half of your team. And you would know because you're out of the office for 10 calendar days between the 4 days in the office. So that's just one phasing approach we're looking at right now. We're probably going to implement that this summer for our administrative offices. As far as employees who claim they can't come in, same rules as before. Get a letter from a doctor, says you can't come to work. We're going to honor that, I would think, in most every case. But we can't really just allow employees to say, I'm not going to come to work because of a generalized fear if their work needs to be done in the office, which is frequently the case.
Okay. I realize Judge Anderson has got a commitment here in a few minutes. I just have a couple more points. There's a reference in the report to a screening test for those who are entering a courthouse. Now, obviously, we're doing weapon screening now, but what expanded screening test do you envision potentially statewide?
Are you asking me, Steve?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. So there's a difference between the courthouse and the courtroom. So the courts really only have, you know, direct control over the courtroom. And the Supreme Court order limited itself to courtrooms. We can't dictate to a county what they do to people entering the courthouse, so to speak. So I can only speak to the courtrooms. And that also is something that the chief judge and the local judge are able to discuss with their stakeholders in coming up with a plan. There is some flexibility there. The task force recommends a screening of some type to, again, reduce the risk as much as possible. I think standard questions, like Judge Anderson was talking about, have you been distancing lately? Have you been to large events? Have you been out of state? Have you been coughing, sneezing, temperature? Maybe take someone's temperature. Those are all reasonable steps to take, I think, to protect, you know, the large group.
Okay. There's a reference here to plexiglass between the public and court staff. Do you see that statewide or on a county-by-county basis, anybody?
Well, actually, in Milwaukee County, in the criminal courts, they already have that.
Thank you, John.
For years, they've had plexiglass that keeps the gallery from the nave of the courtroom.
Okay. And I want to, as we close here, because I realize time's getting away with us, page 16 of the report, it may not be possible for social distancing to be constitutionally applied to the defendant and the defense counsel sit next to each other. How big a problem is that when a defendant who maybe has just come in from a county jail population walks in and sits next to his or her defense counsel? That quote just struck me. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, Judge Anderson, let me ask you a question. How did you deal with it in your case?
Well, what we did, obviously, in my particular case, you know, we talked with the attorneys beforehand about trying to social distance whenever you can at counsel table, but recognizing that, you know, during a jury trial or other court proceedings, the defense lawyer needs to consult with their client, and they need to talk sometimes very, very privately, you know, whisper into each other's ears, and that's not social distancing. You know, if they're incarcerated, they're not getting out of the jail. They're going to be screened from a medical standpoint while they're in jail or while they're in jail anyway. So there's a certain degree of, you know, safety there. You know, most of us understand that, you know, we have jobs that put us in the line of some danger. We understand that. And most people in the court system recognize that, you know, when we took on these responsibilities, sometimes we're going to have to do things that are uncomfortable. But protecting people's constitutional rights and being able to consult with their lawyer is important. For the most part, I dealt with it at trial. I reminded people, you know, try and socially distance when you don't have to talk, but I let them get together and talk when they needed to. And that's, you're going to have to be flexible. You're going to have to understand that this is not a perfect situation. We're going to have to do the best we can with what we have.
Just a couple more questions. You're all three veteran judges. How are you going to work it now? You have all said both counsels approach the bench. How's that going to work in the COVID-19 setting?
One of the recommendations is that you don't have what's called a sidebar anymore. If the lawyers really need to confer with the judge, I think they're going to have to do it in chambers where they can social distance and where they can speak with each other clearly.
And Steve, it's important to remember that we have a combination going forward, some in-person proceedings and a lot of virtual proceedings. So in a criminal case, for example, if you're having a Zoom hearing, the lawyer and the defendant, his client or her client, can talk privately on a cell phone and mute themselves on the Zoom conference. So in some sense, the video conference program provides for greater confidentiality. We have waiting rooms. You can segregate people out of the Zoom conference. And so it's really a combination going forward. And in fact, the courts of Wisconsin, the circuit courts and municipal courts, are going to remain remote proceedings unless and until the chief judge approves an in-person plan. And even when that in-person plan is approved, it typically is going to involve a combination of in-person proceedings and remote proceedings.
You know, Steve, okay. One thing that I think everyone has to understand is, I think the operative words in the chief judge's statement that you made at the beginning of the proceedings, the three operative words were "in this environment."
Yes.
And so the task force report really sets forth a framework for each individual counties with their chief judges and presiding judges to find the best way to bring the justice system back to life, back to the way it used to be. And I do think we are eventually going to get there, but you need to deal with what's going on in this environment. And I think the report was very well done. I'm glad the Wisconsin Supreme Court adopted it because it really helps all judges and everyone involved in any court case. It helps them immensely.
Okay, last question, because I realize time's slipping away. The new normal that's referred to, what do you envision? Okay, your advice, courts are so vital to our democracy. Your elevator short advice to someone about the new normal, our court system in 6 months. Judge Koshnick, you're going first.
Well, one of the things I've learned managing this pandemic from a court administration point of view is don't decide anything more than you have to. So 6 months is an eternity to me right now. I'm thinking about getting masks on the UPS truck next week to the counties. So we have to really kind of wait and see what happens. If the thing sort of peters out, we go back to normal more quickly, that would be great. If there's this rebound people are talking about, we may have to scale back our in-person operations. So I don't know. I would just implore people to please be patient with one another. Remember, we're all in this together, and I think we all share the same values, protecting constitutional rights, protecting individual liberty, and protecting people's right to be relatively free from unreasonable risks. And keeping those things in mind, we can continue to work together, as I think we have up to this point, and see things and make decisions as you have to as things develop.
Judge Anderson, your thoughts 6 months from now, sir?
Well, I'm going to be a little bolder because I think that forcing the court system into using the type of video conferencing technology has allowed the genie to pop out of the bottle on this thing. And I'm finding that an awful lot of people, attorneys and litigants and businesses, they think there's some real viability for this technology to move forward indefinitely in the court system. And I suspect that, you know, right now I'm going to be running Zoom every day for as long as I can see in some capacity or another. The court system has been forced to enter the 21st century, and we're here today. So we are.
Judge D'Amato, I'll give you final closing remarks.
I think that 6 months from now, we're going to find out that jury trials and court trials are going to remain done in a courtroom or in a room set up like a courtroom. I agree with Judge Anderson. I think the genie is out of the bottle, so to speak, in terms of being able to do Zoom hearings on non-jury trials and not court proceedings, but things leading up to jury trials and court trials. And I think actually it will be more efficient and cases can be processed more quickly. But it's all going to depend on 6 months from now, what is the environment that we are living in? Because the environment is going to dictate what we do, how much or how little we do at that point in time.
Gentlemen, such an important discussion. I want to thank former Judge Randy Koshnick, Director of State Courts, Bayfield County Circuit Court Judge John Anderson, and former Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge John D'Amato. Gentlemen, such an important discussion. Thank you so much for joining Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.